today, more at the pump to expand the Skyway. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll tell you why voters and some public officials are pushing back on a big expenditure for the Skyway, along with other infrastructure improvements for the city. What do you think about the proposed gas tax? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, some good news. Live music is coming back to downtown venues this spring at Daly's Place. We'll tell you about that. First, though, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The state reports that COVID cases increased by over 6,700 yesterday. The cumulative total in Florida since the pandemic began stands at 2.1 million. Hospitalizations only went up yesterday by one person. That's a change. However, the death rate rose again. It stands now at 34,164 in Florida. 7.5 million Florida residents have received at least one dose of a vaccine. We say it every day on this show. We'll say it again today. Go get your vaccine. As we've been reporting, the Johnson & Johnson product is on pause, so there are plenty of sites across this community to get the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine. Please, everyone, get vaccinated. It has been shown conclusively that vaccinations decrease the rates of hospitalizations and deaths from COVID-19. And the sooner more of us are vaccinated, the sooner we can be done with this whole thing. All right, our other top story today, a proposed $379 million overhaul and expansion of the Skyway system in downtown Jacksonville is facing growing pushback from some city council members. They're going to take a likely vote soon on doubling your local gas tax. If it goes through, you'd pay 6 cents more a gallon for your gas. David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union has a story about this in the paper, and he is on the line. Hey, David, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. Would you be willing to pay a higher gas tax to expand the Skyway and also do some other improvements? Give us a call. It's 549-2937 or tweet me at Melissa in Jax. All right, David, this is a big spend to overhaul and expand the Skyway, nearly $400 million. As you're reporting, the Finance Committee Chairman on the Council, Matt Carlucci, sent the Jacksonville Transportation Authority a list of questions about all of this. And I think that reflects the concerns he and other council members are getting from their constituents about how much money we would all be spending on the Skyway, which has long been controversial. So what are the concerns being raised this week?
I think the fundamental concern is, as you mentioned, it's a huge amount of money to spend, $379 million, and it would require a tax increase. So when you put those two together, there's a lot of questions among council members that they want to make sure that if they were to put that money up, that it actually would be a worthwhile investment, and to not repeat the really bad experience the city has had with the Skyway, which also was billed at that time as being something that was, you know, cutting edge, on the forefront of transportation, something that would help downtown develop. Similar arguments to what we're hearing now were voiced back then. So on the one hand, there's the people open to the idea that maybe the solution to the Skyway's problem is that it's no longer a ride to nowhere. It's a 10-mile system instead of a 2.5-mile system. It goes into surrounding neighborhoods where there are restaurants and residents, businesses. The flip side is this just putting good money after bad, not learning from our own history in terms of whether this is actually a worthwhile investment of so much money, $380 million.
Yeah, that's quite a price tag. Now, what they want to do, as you report in the Times Union, is convert the Skyway to what they're calling the ultimate urban circulator, or U2C. This would involve autonomous vehicles. So basically, people could ride the Skyway part of the way and then hop in a driverless car the rest of the way to their destination. Does that sort of describe what they want to do?
Yeah, they want to go even further than that. They want to make it a complete conversion. So you would keep the elevated structure that the Skyway runs on now. But once they make this conversion, if they were able to and had the money to do it, you would have a 10-mile system where these autonomous vehicles are how you'd get around on that system. And they'd have rubber tires, so they wouldn't need to have the special tracks that the Skyway has. So they would run it on the elevated structure, which is 2.5 miles, and then they would come down from the elevated structure with some ramps down to street level, and then they would go on street level to, say, go over to University of UF Health, for instance, on 8th Street. So picture it this way. If the system were built out, you would be able to get on one of these automated vehicles in the Riverside neighborhood and then take it all the way across downtown to UF Health. And that'd be the idea. It would be a seamless type of ride, some of it on elevated structure, some at street level, but you would no longer have the Skyway trains.
Yeah, the train. So yeah, thank you for clarifying that. For some reason, I did not grasp that the trains would be gone forever. It would just be a series of vehicles that people could ride. But let me ask you, has this been done in other cities?
No, and that's the other part of it. This is you can't really point to another city and say, well, it worked or it didn't work in another city. JTA really is on the forefront of this particular type of technology. There's a lot of interest in it. Some people would say, well, that's great. It's bold. It's innovative. It's seizing the moment and seeing what's ahead in the future and taking advantage of emerging technology. The flip side is, well, is the city just a guinea pig in terms of whether this will work or not for other cities to learn whether they should make similar investments? But it's all new. Autonomous vehicles are becoming more and more common, but to have it used in this way for a 10-mile transit system, that's very uncommon.
You also report that City Councilwoman Leanna Cumber says she'd rather see the city just tear down the Skyway and use this money for other needs. That would cost millions too, but not as much as the autonomous vehicles. Is that right?
Yes, very much so. She's a staunch opponent of it and has even said that if JTA is right, that it would cost $90 million to tear it down and repay whatever federal grants the city got to build it in the first place. She'd pay $90 million all day long in order to save $300 million that would be spent above and beyond that to expand the system. So there would be a cost of tearing it down, as there would any project, and then there would be a cost to repaying some of the federal dollars that came into the city in order to build it to begin with.
And David, as you've been reporting and others have as well, the mayor has dubbed this whole initiative Jobs for Jacks, asking voters to pay 6 cents more per gallon at the pump to pay for dozens of road, drainage, and transit projects all over town that I think most people agree are needed. But this conversion of the Skyway would account for 40% of the total expenditure. So would it be a possibility that they would approve the gas tax, but not for this piece of it, that they might, there might be more support for the other projects, but not necessarily the conversion of the Skyway?
Yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, there's a range of possibilities of what City Council could do. They could reject any gas tax increase at all, keep it at 6 cents. They could agree to go up the full 6 cents and split that 3 cents to JTA, 3 cents to the city for its transportation projects, which is a proposal that will be brought to them. Or they could say split the difference, and maybe they don't go up 6 cents. They go up 3 cents or 4 cents or 2 cents. They could increase it by a certain amount. That means there's less transportation projects. And that means there may or may not be full funding for the Skyway in it as requested by JTA. So a whole menu of options is before City Council in terms of how to go forward. It's not all or nothing.
Lots of calls. Let us know your thoughts. Are you willing to pay more at the pump, 6 cents more per gallon, for a really expensive project to convert the downtown Jacksonville Skyway into autonomous vehicles? Driverless cars, essentially. The trains would go, and instead you could ride the Skyway on the rails and at street level, but in a single driverless autonomous vehicle that ostensibly could get you to your destination easier. 549-2937. Richard near YMCA is on the line. Hi, Richard. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'd like to mention that a few years ago, the Transportation Research Board did a study of downtown circulator systems. They surveyed 40 transit operators with systems using different modes, including Jacksonville Skyway. And one of their conclusions was that the "if you build it, they will come" mentality is a failure, downtown circulator systems of any sort are not a recipe for rescuing failing downtowns. And, I think if they want to do a circulator here, they're better off starting small with buses, which are fungible and can be moved around a lot more, and they're proven. And I don't believe they need to tear down the aerial structure. I think they can have something simple on the ground and maintain and keep the aerial structure as a lineal park, which would be a real asset, as you've seen in places like New York and Atlanta. The other thing I'd also want to mention is that with this, as the pandemic has proven, working from home is a big new thing that's not going away. And the downtown workforce, as I see it now, is vastly depleted.
And we're losing your connection there, Richard, but yeah. Okay.
So I don't think you can count on there being a lot of activity downtown that will need a high-tech new urban circulator.
Okay, Richard. All right. So, David Bauerlein, the idea that if they build it, the public will come, certainly there's some skepticism about that. And then also, what about his other point? Could this money be spent to improve the transit system that the city already has? The much maligned bus system, which people complain about all the time. They find it inefficient. It can take hours to get from one point on the map to another. What about that?
Sure. I mean, that's one of the arguments that Leanna Cumber has made, is that if you want to have $379 million, there's a lot of other transportation needs that she feels would be more pressing and more difference-making for people's lives, such as expanding the regular bus system so people can get to their homes to work faster, more conveniently. And so that could be an option too. I mean, the city council has a lot of power to decide what the project list could be. So there's a lot of options out there for them in that regard, no doubt about it.
We have Ari Jolly on the line, the chair of the board of the Jacksonville Transportation Authority. Ari, thanks for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
I'm really well, thanks. Okay, so tell me a little bit about your perspective about this and where the board's head is at with this whole proposal.
Yeah, so I think really does merit some discussion is, we as a board and as an agency, really have been looking at this for a long time, and I know this probably doesn't mean much to anybody else, but for 5 years we have looked at how to rehabilitate the Skyway, and I really like to use the word rehabilitate because what we're not talking about, and I think that's really important for people to understand, we're not talking about perpetuating the Skyway as we currently know it. There will be no more rail. There will be no more of that middle, that center line, that you have to have for these rail cars to hold on to. It's to rehabilitate it. It's to turn it basically into a road. No rails, so that autonomous vehicles, whether they be the ones that we're testing right now or future autonomous vehicles, can operate on them and do so more nimbly. So instead of this one Skyway unit, we could have 3 or 4 or 6 autonomous, vehicles going to a particular destination. Let's say there is an event going on, or we could have them split off. The reality is that these autonomous vehicles would be very nimble and much, they would be, we would be addressing exactly what your previous caller was talking about. They would be on time. Constantly, there would be roads. They would be coming every few minutes, so that people wouldn't be waiting there. But I digress just a little bit. So we looked at this for 5 years. 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, we wanted to make sure we knew what the public wanted, and we knew what the city leaders wanted, and what the business leaders wanted. So we had a very robust series of meetings, focus meetings. We pulled in business leaders, the public, just to say, what do you want to do with the skyway? Do you, in fact, want to tear it down? Do you want to rehabilitate it? And, you know, we used that input to come up with as well as the data that we have. Mm-hmm. Everything points to the fact that the concept of autonomous vehicles is here to come, and it's going to replace vehicles as we know it. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time. And so, and we knew that tearing down the skyway has ramifications that are not necessarily obvious.
Let me ask you about that. What would be the ramifications involved with tearing down the skyway and just saying it hasn't worked, and why? And the argument that you're hearing from some callers is, why throw good money after bad? What would be the downside to tearing it down?
Yeah, so let me share that with you too. I'm so glad you asked that. So, you know, when we built the Skyway 30-something years ago, we got it with grand money. And the reality is that, and people have, you know, people like to take different positions, but we work with the federal government all the time, and a significant source of our money comes from the federal government. And the reality is that when you no longer use a project for which you've gotten federal money in the manner in which it was intended, there are payback consequences. So at a minimum, we're looking at a significant chunk of money that we would have to pay back to the government if we didn't continue to use the Skyway for the manner
in
which it was
intended. How much is it? Is it $90 million? Is that the price tag?
Well, the $90 million, you have to be careful about, you know, what that could entail. So approximately half of that is the payback obligation. And then the other half of that is just the sheer cost of tearing down this superstructure. And mm-hmm. think about the disruption, you know, to see the 2.6 miles of businesses and roads, you know, that you would have. So the $90 million is inclusive of not only the payback obligation, but also the business interruption and the cost of the teardown.
Let me ask you though, Ari, you're asking the city council and the voters to essentially take a leap of faith that there will be robust ridership of this new concept, which is exciting, let's be clear. And it is the wave of the future, let's be clear. But the timing isn't great, right, David Bauerlein, in the sense that people are saying let's spend this money on bread and butter items, you know, basic infrastructure improvements, rather than a high concept, expensive new system that may or may not get ridership. Can you understand the skepticism?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. But you know what? I also want to, you know, I hear that all the time, and quite frankly, before I joined the board, I would probably have the same perception. But let's just talk about the fact that, you know, before the pandemic hit, you know, the Skyway did have ridership. We had about 1.2 million people riding the Skyway annually. So it wasn't that nobody was using it. So there was, you know, we probably need to make sure we share some of that data. But Melissa, think about this, and this is the exciting part. You know, I've lived in Jacksonville for, we immigrated, you know, from Germany when I was 13 in 1974. And the Jacksonville of 1974 and the Jacksonville of today are such incredibly different places. You know, the Jacksonville of today is a place where people want to come to. And as you know...
I'm so sorry to cut you off. It's just that there are so many people waiting to comment.
Oh, I know.
If I may. And David Bauerlein of the TU is still with us. Let me get just a few more callers on the air. David, Intercoastal West. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Two or three things I'd like to mention about this. I think we need to get past the idea that Jacksonville is a downtown society. We are a metropolitan area. You know, we're a countywide city. The problem I have with spending $360 million on a failed people mover in downtown is it's only serving, what, 2 or 3% of the population at best. Second thing I'd like to mention, they want to do a 6-cent sales tax on petroleum. But in 20 years from now, there's going to be a high percent of electric vehicles in the community itself. We should take that money, if we're looking at expanding our roadways and our ability to commute throughout the neighborhoods, we should take that money and invest in EV charging stations downtown.
Well, to be fair, JTA is beefing those up, David, but I take your point. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to both our guests now, Ari and David Bauerlein. David Bauerlein, let's start with you, and then we'll go back to our board chair. People say we shouldn't invest so much in downtown. That's a high price tag for downtown. Now, that said, cities without vibrant downtowns don't do as well as cities that have vibrant urban cores. So the argument to invest is based on one that urban planners have been talking about for some time.
Right, and transit is a part of any downtown development. To be able to just park once and get around downtown or not even need to bring your car downtown at all, we have seen that over and over again in successful downtowns. The thing on the Skyway is that, you know, it was built originally to be part of downtown development, and then when it didn't get the ridership, which quite frankly were pie in the sky at that time, we're talking about decades ago, the explanation was, well, downtown just didn't take off. So the Skyway or the UTC is not going to drive downtown development. It could be complementary to it and may even in some ways help with it, but I don't think it's going to be something that's going to catalyze downtown development, because the Skyway didn't do that. The UTC probably won't do that either.
Okay.
I just make one point too on the Skyway ridership. We did look as part of our coverage of it. We looked at some federal transit agency statistics, and it got up as high as 1.3 million passenger trips in 2015. It has been going down since then, and it was about 800,000 in 2019, which was, of course, the last year before the pandemic. So it's kind of been on a downward slide as opposed to growing in recent years.
Okay, so what about that? Ari Jolly, our board chair of JTA.
No, I absolutely hear the statistics, you know, but again, you know, the Skyway as it's currently planned, you know, is not the vision of what it was. It was supposed to have been a 10 mile people mover. So going back to the downtown vitality, you and I and the other folks on this call know that Northeast Florida is getting a major influx on a daily basis of people coming to us. And your previous caller said it really well, you said it really well. A vibrant downtown is a key to continued, you know, economic prosperity and vitality of a municipality. So, and just look at JRTC, look at where the JTA is currently situated. We have new buildings, and the Brooklyn area. We have such vitality going on in that area. People are moving back or moving into the downtown area. So I don't think the vision of a revitalized Jacksonville is a stretch. I think it's just something that took a little while to get here. It wasn't there 30 years ago, but I think what we're seeing now is exactly that. Jacksonville is such an amazing opportunity for a revitalized downtown because of the river, because of all of the amenities it has to offer. And so I don't think that vision is at all unreasonable. We just have to create a system that does take people where they need to go. And right now it's a 2.5-mile system, but we need to reach, you know, all the way down to the stadium. We need to reach to Shands. We need to reach into St. Vincent's. And maybe those extensions are, maybe those extensions need to be phased.
Okay.
You know, but initially we need to revitalize, you know, the Skyway.
I hate to cut you off again, but we're coming up against a break.
That's okay.
There will be 5 public meetings across the city so that the public can weigh in on this. And David Bauerlein, you know, we're getting lots of tweets, emails, people saying we should turn the elevated portion into a park like the High Line in New York. That'd be cool, but it doesn't look like it's on the table. More to come, David, because this legislation hasn't even been filed yet.
Absolutely. It's going to be a big debate.
Okay. About that. And I want to thank you, David Bauerlein of the Times Union, Ari Jolly, calling in unprompted. We appreciate you doing that. She's the chair of the board of JTA. More about this at WJCTnews.org later today as well. Thanks to you both.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay. And sorry we couldn't get every call on. That is certainly a hot topic. We'll continue to cover it. Later, live music is coming back to Downtown Daly's Place. We'll tell you who's performing, but up next.
We have been working hard over the past few years to better ourselves and be a better financial institution and partner for our local community.
The rapid growth of local mainstay at ViStar Credit Union. We'll be right back. Well, ViStar Credit Union is expanding and actually on a path to becoming one of the biggest credit unions in the United States. How'd they get there? Well, CEO Brian Wolfberg told me more.
Hey, Brian, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely, and good to talk to you again.
ViStar Credit Union is doing really interesting things right now. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to your leadership of this major player in Jacksonville. Let's begin with the big news that you've purchased a bank in Georgia, Heritage Southeast Bank in Jonesboro. This makes you, once the deal goes through, one of the biggest credit unions in the U.S. Is that right?
Yes, it does. We have been working hard over the past few years to better ourselves and be a better financial institution and partner for our local community. While at the same time working to expand geographically. And we've been growing as a credit union in the industry, but this is definitely a large leap forward for us.
And what prompted the move to acquire this institution over the state line?
Yeah, several years back when I joined the institution, we were looking at ways to improve our credit union, both back of house and front of house for our members. And one of the things that I saw is that we needed to grow. We had become well-received, well-loved in Northeast Florida, in the greater Jacksonville area. And that was amazing for us. We were doing really well in Northeast Florida. But we wanted to grow because we thought it was important to gain scale, so that we could build better efficiency for our organization, so we could return more to our members, return more to our communities, and continue to compete with other financial institutions that were growing. And that included growing organically. We've been building branches outward contiguously from where we were located. We've been building down in Melbourne and Titusville and in Orlando and Tallahassee, but also looking at mergers and acquisitions. And as you're probably well aware, we did one about 2 years ago in 2019, which helped us test out the model and build out the processes. And we've been talking to a variety of organizations over the past couple of years, and we were just waiting for the right institution to be a good partner, a good fit for us. And when we met the individuals at Heritage Southeast, we knew we had met the perfect partner for our growth into Georgia.
Now, going beyond that acquisition, let's talk about your footprint here in Jacksonville. A few years ago, you moved your corporate headquarters to downtown Jax. As more people start coming back into the commercial office environment, as vaccination rates tick up, you've been doing a lot of improvements to your physical plant downtown. Tell me a little bit about how you expect office work to flow in the financial world and really, you know, with any company that has a large number of employees once we get through this pandemic.
I think it's going to vary depending on the industry that organizations are in. But for us personally, we know that we are a mission-driven organization. Our purpose isn't simply to provide banking, provide financial services for people, but to truly connect with our communities and to ensure that we're doing good, for the members that we have and the communities that we serve. And so we know personally that it's important for our employees to connect with our organization, to understand our culture, and to really live what it means to be Bistar. So for us personally, we're going to look at ways to integrate work from home and everything that we've learned over the past few years, but we're definitely going to still have a strong presence on our downtown campus. I think what you're going to see across the industry is different organizations return to their offices and then leverage work from home as a work-life balance aspect and a benefit for employees. But and it's good. There's a lot of work that you can take home. There's a lot of work that you can do from home. But if you really want to build a culture, if you want to have employees connected to each other, if you want to sit around an office and think up new ideas of how to push the envelope and how to grow an organization, that is still going to absolutely take face-to-face interactions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what business you're in, it's still a people business. And we believe that while it might put a slowdown on some growth in commercial real estate and commercial office space, eventually we'll be on our back, we'll be ticking back up just based on our growth rate.
Let's talk a little bit about Vistar's philanthropic efforts. Banks have been giving the community support under the Community Reinvestment Act. Credit unions go another way, like Vistar. You've supported the recent Jax River Jams concert series, the Emerald Trail, that's the effort to build a green belt around the city of Jacksonville, and some other efforts too. So what drives your philanthropy?
Yeah, as you noted, credit unions don't fall under the Community Reinvestment Act, and that's because of our organizational structure. We are owned by our members. Every single member who has an account relationship with us is an owner of the organization. And so it's naturally in our interest to invest in our members, to invest in our communities. We don't have separate shareholders. It's just a different operating model. And so we have often, or for a long time, just been focused on making sure that we provide access to financial services to our members and in all areas of the community. We have a plan to give back to our community. We've been focused on giving to things like community building, youth, military, and our industry. And we've given to, in this past year alone, we gave to over about 400 organizations. We donated about $3 million back into the Northeast Jacksonville community. And as you said, things like the River Jams, Mosh, Emerald Trail, and many other great nonprofits in the community. What we want to do is make sure that we do good in our communities and that we lead by examples and setting example for others to follow. We want to make sure that we're making our members' lives better. We do that in the financial services that we provide, the higher deposit rates, lower loan rates. But we also think it's important that we provide for the community as a whole, and we help elevate the region in which they live. Whether it's our employees, our members, or the community, we want to create a great place to live, work, and play for all.
Well, thanks for your time. He's Brian Wolfberg, President and CEO of Vistar Credit Union. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, you can be part of taking a snapshot of this area's health. Susan Gritch is president and CEO of the Health Planning Council of Northeast Florida. She's on the line to tell us about the Community Health Needs Assessment and why it matters. Hey, Susan, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So tell us about this. What is the Community Health Needs Assessment?
Well, the Community Health Needs Assessment is, as it implies, an assessment of the needs of the community. It is required of nonprofit hospitals. So the Jacksonville Nonprofit Hospital Partnership has to do a community health needs assessment every 3 years. And it's as a result of the Affordable Care Act. And the important thing about the health needs assessment is it helps define what are the priorities for health and community benefit over the upcoming 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it's important to identify those gaps that exist in our communities.
So are you asking the public then to go online and do a survey? Is that right?
Absolutely. I think that, through the name Community Health Needs Assessment, we really, really need to hear from the community. We have obviously evidence-based data that we use for the assessment, but the data that we get from the community through a survey is really the most important, because we really need to hear from the residents of the community. They know best where the gaps are in access to health and health care. And without their input, we're just not really going to hit the mark. So it is the most critical part of the needs assessment.
And this is not just for Duval County, but the entire region. So anyone listening that can hear the sound of my voice across Northeast Florida, you want them to do this, to take part in this, yes?
Absolutely. Baker, Clay, Duval, Nassau, and St. John's counties, all residents, specifically vulnerable populations, communities of color. These are the people that we need to hear from. And we have found that surveys are the best way to get that information and that data and to be able to assimilate it.
Well, what do you expect to come back with the data? You've done this kind of thing before, right?
Certainly, certainly. We come back with evidence of health disparities. It can be geographic, lots of different demographics, but specifically vulnerable populations do not have the access to health care that others have. And, we also can see a demonstration of racial inequities, et cetera. Mm. And, these are systemic and they need to be addressed, but we can't properly address them unless we have the evidence based on what our community members are telling us.
And how does the pandemic complicate this process, which, as you say, you've done before, but we're in a really different era now after a year of pandemic?
Well, one of the ways the pandemic has complicated this is that normally when we get feedback from the community, we do it in a variety of evidence-based methods, and one of them we're focusing on today is surveys. But usually we are able to do in-person focus groups whereby we go to all the different communities and have a publicly available focus group where we can really hear from the community in that setting. With the pandemic, that's made that very difficult. So we really are relying on the survey and interviews to get that information. That's why it's really critical for people to just take a moment and complete the survey. It's very simple. It's very quick. But, we need to hear from every voice. It's critical to an accurate assessment.
Okay. So with all of that said, Susan, where can people across this 5-6 county region access the survey? And is there a deadline to complete it?
Well, thank you for asking that. This is very important. Our website, which is an acronym for Health Planning Council of Northeast Florida, the website is hpcnef.org. The survey is available on that, as well as our social media sites, Facebook and Instagram. And the nice thing about it is you can click on the survey, but there's also a QR code. So if you have a cell phone, you can take a picture of the QR code, and that'll launch the survey right away. And I don't know if I forgot to mention, the surveys are available in English and Spanish.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we're fast approaching the deadline, April 23rd. So this is something that, you know, we don't want people to put off. We really want people to give us an opportunity to hear their voice.
Again, it's hpcnef.org. Complete
yes.
the health needs assessment survey. And then again, let's mention again, this data will help make this area healthier. That's the goal, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have to diagnose, you know, what are the priority health issues if we're going to effectively address them. And so this is the first part of that. It's the assessment. Then once we get all the information of, you know, where are the health disparities, where are the gaps in healthcare, then we can come up with a strategic plan to actually address those in, you know, a structured, effective fashion.
So again, take a minute to fill out the Community Health Needs Assessment. It's courtesy of the Health Planning Council of Northeast Florida. The deadline's April 23rd, so do it now. It'll only take a moment. Go to hpcnef.org and let them hear your voice. Thank you so much, Susan Gritch. She is President, CEO of the Health Planning Council of Northeast Florida. Thanks so much, Susan.
Thank you.
A quick break, and when we come back, have you been out to eat lately? Have you been to a concert of any kind lately? Live music is coming back to Daly's Place, including a Machine Gun Kelly concert next week. We will take a look at that and the rest of their spring and summer lineup in just a moment and see how they're going to entertain safely. That's after this. You're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com.
Florida State University is a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our state and nation. Gifts for first-time buyers are online at fsu.edu/mytag.
After losing a friend shot and killed by police, and after protests followed by more police shootings, Saeed Tijan Thomas Jr. despaired maybe it wasn't much use fighting anymore. After George Floyd was killed, instead of protesting, he started reporting on people leading protests for his new podcast, Resistance. We'll talk on the next Fresh Air.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Robin Young. New Jersey launches a unique lawsuit against gun maker Smith & Wesson. Some say it could be as important as lawsuits against big tobacco, but it targets ads.
This lawsuit, if successful, could be the first window that the public ever really has into the inner workings of a gun maker.
Next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
She's the woman behind more than 24 books, comics, and short stories. So Nnedi Okorafor knows a bit about writing.
It really does feel like stepping onto a tightrope that's invisible, that's over water. But like when you step on that rope, the rope is actually there.
We talk sci-fi, solitude, and our pandemic year with author Nnedi Okorafor next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, live music is coming back to downtown Daly's Place this spring, and it kicks off with a Machine Gun Kelly show next week. Chad Johnson is Senior VP of Sales and Service and Chief Content Officer at the Jaguars, and he's on the line. Hey, Chad. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Okay, so this is exciting. After a year of no full capacity live shows, you're getting back to them on April 23rd with Machine Gun Kelly. Tell us about the show.
Well, I can tell you right now, the excitement around live music coming back is unlike anything I've seen. We announced the show just last Monday. We went on sale, and we sit here today with only a little over 200 seats left. So we're going to have a clean sellout for this, and it's just really clear that the marketplace and our fans are ready to get back to live music, and we're excited to host and be able to do so in a safe way for our fans.
Yeah, so what does that mean? What are the protocols going to be like?
Well, we've been lucky enough that, you know, our sister company, All Elite Wrestling, has been in Daly's Place filming their television programming, and we've had fans for those events. I think 26 of those events so far. We have hosted two drive-in concerts with John Party. The Jaguars have had fans throughout the entire season last year, so we've been able to work through what the safety protocols and measures are, and they include things like mobile tickets so that there's not any hand-to-hand exchanges, enhanced entry processes with new magnetometers where people can walk right through, but there's no bag inspections. We're a completely cashless facility. Again, so that there's no exchanging of you know, hand-to-hand touch points throughout the building. And then a lot of enhanced facility cleaning protocols with our disinfectant specialists and making sure that everyone sees that the building is clean and safe for their experience.
And, I mean, let's be clear, too. It is an outdoor venue. There is fresh air flowing all throughout Daly's Place. Masks won't be required. But it will be packed. So what would you say to those who feel that even though it's outdoors, technically, it might not still be a safe experience because we do still have active virus spreading?
Well, we work with not only state healthcare officials and leadership, we work with our local government and healthcare leaders, and then we work with the content providers themselves, right? So Machine Gun Kelly is a direct event with Daly's Place and the Machine Gun Kelly camp. In other cases, you look at, we recently announced a Brad Paisley concert that goes on sale tomorrow, and we work with our partners Live Nation there on their protocols. So each event will have a different cadence and series of protocols that we take to make sure that safety's at top of mind for our guests, our staff, and the artists and their folks as well. So we will have our staff wearing masks. We will have our disinfectant specialists cleaning the facility. We will follow our physical distance protocols as far as line queuing and restrooms and those things to keep those safety measures in place. And then as each event is rolled out and what those protocols are, the fans will have a choice on how comfortable they feel coming to the event and what we'll be able to do to continue to provide that safe environment.
And let's point out, you've got 8 other shows on the schedule for this summer and fall. These were all postponed from 2020, right?
Yeah, so there's a number of shows we have. The Doobie Brothers, Alicia Keys will be kicking off her national tour here in Jacksonville. Matchbox 20, Goo Goo Dolls, Rod Stewart, Two Kane Brown shows. So there's a good lineup of shows that were postponed and rescheduled. But what's even more exciting, Melissa, is we'll have another announcement of a concert today. We will announce two new shows on Tuesday. So not only are the rescheduled shows coming back online, but we're seeing an increased activity in new concerts being booked because we know Florida is one of those states that is starting to open back up for business a little bit ahead of some of the other markets.
Well, Chad Johnson, thanks for the update. You can get more info at dailiesplace.com. Get your tickets now if you want to go to the show. They're going fast. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll close with Bad Things by Machine Gun Kelly. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for a Friday Media Roundtable. Join us then and have a great day.
Hey, I can't explain it. Hey, I love the pain. Okay, yeah, I'm insane. But you're the same. I can't explain it. Hey, I keep it strange. Okay, yeah, I'm insane. But you're the same. I want you forever. Hey, even when we're not together. You said I want you forever. So I can take you wherever. Like, I want you forever. Even when we're not together. I want you forever. I can look at you and never want.
Am I out of my head? Am I out of my mind? If you only knew all good things alike, don't think that I can't explain it. What can I say? It's complicated. Don't matter what you say. Don't matter what you do. I only wanna do two things for you. So good that you can't explain it. What can I say? You and me,
right.
'Cause we're just living, just you and me. I want you forever, even when we're not together.
You said
I want you forever,
so I can take you wherever. Like,
I want you forever, even when we're not together. I want you forever, but you will never.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.